Hey, you're listening to the Football Diary podcast. Thanks for dropping by. It's all about the FA Cup third round this week with loads of football to talk about. But we won't have time, obviously, to discuss all the action. And believe me, there was plenty. But we'll have some Premier League focus, of course, looking at Liverpool's win at Arsenal. But also some cup sets, naturally, as Maidstone United beat Stevenage 1-0. And Wrexham won away at Shrewsbury. But it's at the Emirates where we'll start, Miles. An interesting game where Liverpool won 2-0 against Arsenal, who, by all accounts, had a really dominant first half of football. But is it as simplistic enough to say that the difference between the two teams was that Liverpool could finish their chances and Arsenal couldn't?
No, I think that is exactly what it boils down to be honest. It's a difficult patch for Arsenal now, isn't it? I think it's one win in seven since the loss to Aston Villa. I love to bring that up. And it comes off the back of the same problems in each game, that they are creating chances because they've got some excellent creative players on the pitch, but they just don't seem to be able to finish them. There's obviously a lack of form in front of goal from a few key players. Obviously, Jesus was out in this game with an injury and Nketiah wasn't trusted to come in. So you wonder where goals are going to come from for Arsenal. And this could have been a real momentum builder for them. A chance away from the league to pick up a vital win against a big opponent, particularly after they've just drawn with Liverpool earlier on. It could have been a huge result for them. And actually, the way they dominated the game, particularly in the first half, it should have been a huge result for them. But they just ruined missed chances once again. And it comes down to Arteta probably being the only person on the planet that is saying that Arsenal should be happy with their striking options right now. It's nowhere near good enough.
Yeah, you were saying they were dominant in the first half. I don't even think that's an exaggeration. And this Liverpool side that they came up against was kind of a little bit patchwork as well. I feel like this was a great time to have got a good result against Liverpool, and the kind of momentum that would have given Arsenal at a time when they really needed it would have been really crucial to them. So it kind of begs the question, really, is Arsenal's season faltering? And I know we talk about the need for a striker, and me and Dave spoke about it last week as well, came up with a couple of names, which I'm sure we'll talk about in some detail later. But what does Arteta need to do? Is he got to change anything with the team he's got? Does he need extra additions? And why is he not trusting Nketiah? It feels like if he wants a natural goal scorer, surely he's good enough to take up that position and score the goals that they need, right?
Well, with the money that they gave Nketiah when they signed into that new deal and giving him Henry's number, you thought there would be a bit more trust in him. But I think that's a massive part of what Arteta needs to do. Now, granted, it was Liverpool in this game, and Arsenal would have much preferred a slightly lesser opponent where they could have rotated the squad a bit. But we know Arteta doesn't do that very often. Like, why is Saka playing in this game still? Why are you not giving him a rest? Why is someone like Smith Rowe still sat on the bench and Nketiah is sat on the bench? There is enough there that he should be able to rotate here. Because actually now what you've done is you've given those players another 90 minutes of quite tough football against a top opposition, but got nothing from it. And they can't afford to do that over and over again. Saka looks shattered. He looks so burnt out. And Arteta needs to find a way of managing that squad slightly better. And Arsenal, let's not forget, have been massive spenders in the last few transfer windows under Arteta. He's been given everything he wanted and it still doesn't quite feel like it's enough. So there is a bit of me that asks questions of Arteta there, but I also think that you're so close to achieving something excellent that you have to commit to that and you have to go for it. So January should be a really interesting one for them. I think it's going to be quieter than Arsenal fans would like. And that does worry me because, all right, they're 5 points off the top in the Premier League now. They're out of the FA and League Cup, so there's silverware kind of out the window for them. You can't see them winning the Champions League, obviously. So what does this season become for Arsenal now? Is it a successful season if they just consolidate a place in the top four and kind of challenge loosely for the title? I don't see them going all the way in at the moment, not with the way that the squad currently is. They clearly need depth in a couple more positions. Left back is a massive one. I think they probably need some more depth in midfield still as well. And of course, a striker. But they seem to be putting all their hopes in one place for that. And that's dangerous.
It is, because, I mean, the player they called upon in this game was Kai Havertz, who, as we know, is divided opinion. We've not been particularly positive about the move from the start, really. We were saying how it just didn't seem to make sense. And where he'd fit into that Arsenal forward line was always a challenge. And he's played across the front line, really, hasn't he? He's dropped deep as well in some games. He's been chosen as the almost false nine this time. And it's clearly an experiment that didn't work. I mean, Arsenal rattled the crossbar a couple of times. I know Liverpool had their chances in the first half too. Yeah. But you just to get the sense, don't you, that all Arsenal need is a somebody that sniffs out a bit of space and finds the ball bounce to him in the right moment and finishes it effectively. And that's literally what they're missing in some ways. You talked about a few positions they were missing. And the number nine for Arsenal is probably one of the most glaring omissions, I think, from most teams in the Premier League.
And it's funny because Havertz kind of developed a reputation of being someone that could play in that role at Chelsea without ever really doing it successfully. And they've not really tried him at Arsenal doing that since probably the start of the season, first couple of games. He played in the Community Shield, didn't he? And it's frustrating for him because he actually started to look a lot sharper in that team. And it looked like he was starting to find a place and some rhythm. And there were times where he played well in this game, actually. His hold-up play was really successful. He was bringing players into the game well. But there seemed to be this panic from Arsenal in front of goal where none of them seemed to think they were allowed to shoot first time. And there were the amount of chances where if they just hit it and tested Alisson, then they might have had a better result. But instead, they took an extra touch, took it out wide, and all of a sudden narrowed the angle off. And it was just constant. They just seemed scared to shoot. And I wonder how many games have to go by where they're not capitalising on the chances that they're building, where that confidence is completely shot and it has a real effect. We talk, obviously, about what they need to do in January. Now, there is that obvious target that I think Arsenal and a couple of other big teams will be looking at in Ivan Toney. But if Brentford are looking at 100 million for Ivan Toney, which they've got every right to demand, that's what he's worth to them right now, particularly if it means surviving in the Premier League for them. I'm not convinced Arsenal will do that in January. So if Arsenal can't get Ivan Toney because the price is too high, who do they move for instead? I've had a look at five players that I think Arsenal can particularly look at in this window. I wanted to get your opinion on them and whether any of them seem like the most natural fit. So if Arsenal can't get Ivan Toney for 100 million, maybe they could go for one of these players. The first place to look is the Bundesliga, and there are a couple of great goal scorers there at the moment. There's Serhou Guirassy at Stuttgart, who's managed to get 17 goals in 14 games. Now, he is going to the African Cup of Nations, so they would be without him if they sign him in January. But supposedly the release clause is 17.5 million. And if you've got a player that is only second in scoring to Harry Kane in the league right now, that's got to be someone that might be worth looking at. He's 27, so it's not necessarily a long-term answer. But if you are looking to invest in Ivan Toney at some point, maybe it's a good fix for the end of the season and a good option off the bench for next year as well. So that could be a good one. There's another player that's lighting up the Bundesliga as well. Leverkusen at top of the league and Victor Boniface up front. He's been excellent for them. I think he's got 10 goals in the league so far this season. Again, at AFCON, but would be a lot cheaper than bringing in Toney. Whether Leverkusen would be willing to sell at this point of the season when they're competing on all fronts might be difficult, but definitely worth a look at. One more in the Bundesliga, Benjamin Sesko at Leipzig. Obviously, they brought in Lewis Openda in the summer and he's been scoring goals for fun. And it's kind of changed Sesko's role there to what we might have expected. But at Salzburg, he looked so frightening. I know United were linked with him quite heavily when he went to Leipzig. And we know that he can be quite a dynamic forward and would give a focal point to Arsenal's attack, which might take some of the focus off Saka and Martinelli, because we know that teams are just doubling up on Arsenal's wingers at the moment. Yeah. So putting someone as more of a focus down the middle might actually bring the best out in them as well. With that in mind, the fourth suggestion's a bit out of left field, but there's talk that Roberto Firmino is unhappy in Saudi Arabia. Mm. Now, okay, he might be a bit more of the Jesus mould, where he likes to link up with the wide players and is less of the out-and-out goal scorer that Arsenal might need. But Premier League experience, a proven winner, which I think Arsenal need right now if they're trying to get a few things over the line, would link really well with Martinelli and Saka and bring the best out of them again. And I think Martinelli in particular needs that lift and actually would enable them then in the summer to go and spend big on one of the other targets they might have. So one worth thinking about. True. The last one that I wanted to recommend was Jonathan David. So he's got 18 months left on his contract at Lille, has been touted for a move for ages, and how many better number nines are available on the market than him right now? I think he could kick on to that next level. He's done incredibly well in France over the last couple of years. His season is starting to kind of find some form now. He just got a hat-trick in the cup, granted against very weak opposition, but I wonder if maybe that's one that would come in with 18 months left on his deal would be a lot cheaper than some of their options. You're right. Do you think any of those five?
Yeah, well, you're right. I think Tony's probably unattainable. I think the form Brentford are in at the minute, he's going to need to stick around, and it's going to cost them a heck of a premium to prize him away. And even then, I don't think Brentford would kind of go down without fighting, really. But I think Tony's keen to repay the faith shown in him as well, which is understandable. Out of the options you said, it depends how much Arsenal have got to spend. Because, I mean, from an FFP point of view, they did go, I think, further than we expected with their spending by buying Declan Rice, especially. And although he's been pivotal for them, I think that really depletes their options in the January window, especially. So I think they will have to look at something that's A, affordable, B, kind of mid to short term, and nothing more than that. And that goes against their kind of buying profile lately. They tend to buy somebody that's definitely an investment. However, I think of the ones that you've mentioned, I think Guirassy and Jonathan David are probably the two that make sense from a kind of a financial point of view. I mean, what price Jonathan David really with 18 months left on his contract? I mean, how long have they got left to capitalize on his transfer value? This might be the most they get for him selling him now. But Guirassy as well, again, there's a chance it might turn his head seeing a club like Arsenal go in for him. Sesko was a player I think Arsenal should buy. I think that definitely fits kind of the Arteta philosophy or his age profile. And Boniface, I think, is probably too invested in the journey he's on in the season at the moment to kind of leave it halfway. And I don't blame him, to be fair. Let's see how Leverkusen's season plays out. But yeah, I think Guirassy and Jonathan David seem like really exciting potential prospects for Arsenal. What about you, mate?
It's difficult because you've got to capitalize on the January window. Because actually, if you let Jonathan David, for example, go to the summer, there'll be a lot more clubs in for him. And then all of a sudden, you'll compete and you're going to have to offer him a lot more wages. So sometimes it's worth fronting that money in January just to pounce before the rest of the pack. And I actually think that he's someone that I know Villa have been looking at Jonathan David for a long time. Reports are that Man United might be interested now as well in the summer. So it might be now or never for a player like that. So I think he is probably the most proven out of all of them because even Guirassy, who's a bit older, has had a couple of really good seasons, but was quite like he's late to the party, really. He wasn't prolific in his earlier years. So you never know whether it's a run of form right now rather than a permanently good striker. I think
Well, they'd
Sesko would
suit
take a lot
Arsenal at
of
the
money.
minute.
Yeah, but yeah, potentially if you're looking at building for the future. But let's not forget, like Ivan Toney's not 21. Like he's 27 as well, I believe, or maybe even 28 now. So signing a 27-year-old as a stopgap for then going and investing massively in Toney doesn't really make sense. Whereas if Chelsea go and spank 100 million on Ivan Toney, but Arsenal have prepared for that by getting in either Jonathan David or Benjamin Sesko, then okay, no worries. I think that works out quite well for him. So yeah, Jonathan David is definitely the one that I would look at. If not, then Benjamin Sesko, I think.
Interesting options anyway. I actually think they'll just stick as they are. I really do. On the balance of
It's
things,
worrying, isn't it, for Arsenal fans
yeah,
that.
it is. And I think that's losing a real chance to kind of make this season a really positive one because the Premier League's so open at the minute at the top of the table, they could find some momentum and quickly stay in the chasing pack. And if they're not careful, City and Liverpool are just going to stretch ahead, aren't they? And Villa, sorry, don't want to keep them out of the quick league
And
picture as
Villa,
well.
second still, man. I know I've not been here for a couple of weeks, but let's not ignore the fact that Villa is second in the league and have won an FA Cup game for the first time since 2016. So I'm happy.
Let's put some
But
focus on Liverpool there before we go,
yeah, I was
actually,
about to
mate,
say
because
that.
I feel like we're always reluctant to kind of praise Liverpool. But I mean, no Salah, obviously, no Van Dijk, no Szoboszlai. So, you know, amongst others, they were quite a depleted team. And I think Jurgen Klopp was rightfully like delighted to get through this game unscathed, first of all, and to beat an Arsenal team that's challenging at the top of the Premier League. So many positives for them to take away. You're not quite convinced by them, are you? You think they're kind of, I don't know, what's the word? Fluking their way to victory at the minute. They are becoming a team that's finding a habit of winning, which is never a bad thing. But are they overperforming, do you think, the way they're playing?
People always talk about one of the hallmarks of champions being able to win games even when you're not playing that well. I really just want to see Liverpool tested by someone. I can't wait for the next Liverpool Man City game and see what happens because I think even Liverpool fans will admit they're not playing their best football, but they're still winning. Like they should never have won this game. Arsenal should have been far more clinical, and the fact that they weren't was why Liverpool were able to capitalize right at the end of the game. But they kept themselves in it. They've got some quality players in the team that are always capable of those moments. Like the ball from Trent for the first goal was excellent. Obviously, Luis Diaz's finish was emphatic. I think he was excellent as well in this game. Jota comes off the bench and has a great impact again. He loves playing Arsenal, doesn't he? So there is definitely a lot to be happy about with Liverpool. And if you'd said to Liverpool fans that going into 2024, they would be in all the cup competitions that they started the season in still, and are favourites for two of them, I imagine, as a minimum, and they're top of the league, that's ridiculous. Like, that's incredible. It's far beyond any expectations of them going into the season. So you do have to give them credit, particularly as you mentioned, the fact that they were missing some key players in this game. But I do think there will be a quiet nervousness from Liverpool fans at the moment, knowing that yes, we're winning, but we do need to start playing better football if we want to be consistent like this across a whole season.
Fair comment, I think, and I'm sure Liverpool fans are kind of hoping this run of form continues, but I think they need to be winning games convincingly, don't they? And that's the issue. And that's what you want to see as a fan if your team's competing, that there's a swagger almost to their play. But I suppose they'll take the win, won't they, and run with it.
Yeah, of
Another
course. Yeah.
team that would be absolutely thrilled with the FA Cup third round, and this is why we love this competition, really. Most of us do, I think. It's a debate, really, isn't it, whether the FA Cup still has its kind of original magic. But the third round is always, I think, the round where you see things like Maidstone United beating Stevenage, for example. There's a real story that kind of makes you feel, I don't know, happy to be a football fan again, because Maidstone United have been through the ringer, haven't they, in the last, in their recent history, even to the point of not even having their own ground for so long. They've a Phoenix club that's rising through the leagues again, currently in the National League South, I believe. So to beat Stevenage, obviously, is one of those cup sets that you kind of want to see, and you root for a team like that to do it. And with a manager like George Elokobi as well, you can't help but sort of feel happy that they've made it through in quite convincing fashion as well. I thought they played really well, the standard that I was quite surprised by. So Maidstone United, has that made you feel like the FA Cup has still got that magic that you always loved?
It was proper retro FA Cup vibes, wasn't it? Even down to like the camera angles that they had at the ground to show the game. Like, it was excellent. And yeah, I think this is what the competition's for. When you've got a club that were in such financial ruin that they literally stopped existing until this Phoenix club was formed, and you think about the revenue benefits of Maidstone's journey in the FA Cup so far, that almost safeguards their future for the next few years. And yeah, being in the sixth tier of English football and knocking out a team from the third tier, well, that is what you want to see at this round of the competition. Actually, if we're honest, this has been one of the more boring third rounds because I think every Premier League team went through other than the ones that were playing other Premier League teams. I think only Burnley and Arsenal have been knocked out from the Premier League so far. Obviously, United are yet to play, so probably have a third soon, mate. But it's moments like this that you have to really enjoy about the competition because it does sometimes feel like it's lost a bit of its magic. But when you hear George Elokobi talking about taking his babies to Wolves,
The
like,
Golden
how can you
Palace, he
not be
called
happy? The Golden Palace, yeah, he kept saying, I want to take my babies, which I thought was very funny. That's what this competition's about. And you're right, they were good value. The first half in particular, they were all over Stevenage. Obviously, when there was a bit more on the line, Stevenage came at them in the second half, and obviously they came very close at times to nicking a draw at least. There was one goal mess scramble, I think they hit the crossbar, and then how the rebound didn't go in, it just smacked the face of the post. But Maidstone won't care. They need that bit of luck, and that's what you refer to when you talk about the magic of the FA Cup. A team like that riding through those moments and the emphatic scenes at the end of the game where the pitch is stormed by all the local kids. There was one guy in a banana costume.
That's brilliant.
Don't know why, but I guess that's what this is here for. Look, we all love football, and sometimes the game takes itself too seriously, and there are so many negative stories around football that we're constantly talking about on here. Like, even in the last couple of weeks, obviously the Super League rearing its ugly head again, this horrible misogyny that's coming out from particular media personalities. We it'd be easy to fall out of love with football sometimes, and then you see stories like Maidstone and George Elokobi, and you think, okay, great, that's why I'm here. So yeah,
Yeah, that's
excellent for
wicked.
them, really, really good.
I mean, Stevenage fans will probably not feel like the FA Cup's particularly magical, with all the focus being on Maidstone being the ones that kind of inflicted this upset on them. But I'm sure
Well,
with time they'll realise that this is, they're part of something magical, aren't they? And you can't really argue against
they.
that. But they should have had a penalty in some way, shouldn't they? No VAR, obviously, because it's not
Yeah.
Premier League ground. But I think they probably should have had a penalty too. But again, not seeing a VAR intervention in a game makes you kind of think, well, we can argue about it afterwards, can't we? That's what football's all about.
I've got no sympathy because they had their moment against Villa last year. So,
That's true, yeah.
stuff them. No, I'm only joking. It's funny, isn't it? Because I never know whether I think that makes the game better or not at this stage. Because obviously, VAR was brought in for a very specific purpose, and we've had constant complaints about it this season. So there is something authentic about a rough pitch, although I say a rough pitch, it's artificial, isn't it? So it's pretty much as perfect as it can be. But a ground like that, no VAR, yeah, it was clumsy. Maidstone should have had another penalty in the first half as well. So
True.
who knows? It was all over the place. But I find it really weird, and I say this every year since it's come in, that in a competition, some games will have VAR and some don't. How you can have essentially different rules in the same competition is bizarre to me. So who knows? But yeah, let's not take anything away from the actual fun of this game. Fair play to Maidstone, and I hope they do get a good draw in the next round. It's always frustrating, isn't it, if they go through and then pick up like a League One or Two team again. Like, it'd be amazing for them, of course, but you do want to see them get one of the big boys, really.
Yeah, well, if it was Wolves as well and Elokobi gets his wish, that'd be pretty magical too. Especially if it
Yeah, it
was
would be
at
fantastic.
Molyneux as well. But that would seem too much like a fixer record if it actually aligned and happened. But yeah, they're the
True.
lowest ranked team by far left in the competition. They were in the third round anyway. So whoever they get next will be again be a huge challenge for them. But bring it on, it's what you love to see. Another team that's really enjoying the FA Cup again this season is Wrexham. I mean, we speak about Wrexham quite a lot. They take a lot of the headlines and for obvious reasons, but
They're
they
Hollywood.
ground out a win. They ground out a win in this occasion. I say ground out because they had plenty of chances. They had a lot of the ball, but couldn't find the back of the net, and it took a really wickedly deflected shot to win the game for them. But Wrexham won't care, will they? This FA Cup kind of run they've been going on lately in recent seasons seems to not really seem to be abating, does it? They were lucky, but I'm sure they'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. It was luck, let's be honest. Like, Shrewsbury, the stats tell one story, but if you're watching the game, Shrewsbury should have absolutely battered them. Like, Taylor Perry should have scored about eight goals himself. It was ridiculous. So Wrexham won't care, you're right. It's cup knockout football. That's what you need. You only need one to go in off a defender's arse and to that to be enough to take you through. But it's funny, isn't it? Because it seems like Wrexham, while there's this story in kind of excitement around them, the narrative keeps building with moments like this. And what, they sit third in the league now and are looking at another promotion. And actually, who knows where the limit is for them if that happens. They've got through to the fourth round now again, which is excellent for them. And a Premier League tie now, and everything that these Wrexham fans have been dreaming of is right in front of them. And it's good to watch. I'll be honest, again, it's another one of those, like, for me, it is feel good. If you're a fan of another League Two team and you can see a team in your league that just has far more money than you, I can see why they might feel like the villain of the piece sometimes. But
True.
actually, there are a lot of worse things in football than Wrexham and how they're coming about. So you've got to enjoy it as much as possible. And seeing like absolute relics of the Premier League, like Stephen Fletcher, like playing for them, it's
Yeah.
fantastic.
It was a similar vibe to Ben Foster joining last season, wasn't it? Where you see a veteran like that trying his luck in a pretty big stage Wrexham's become now as well. So it's almost like one last hurrah for these kind of players. But they've had a few kind of outstanding signings, I guess, initially, because obviously James McClane joined in the summer, which was big news. He's another player that's kind of willing to drop down a level or two because he could probably play in the championship still to kind of be part of this journey. What's their ceiling? That's the question. With this current squad, I think it's probably, in my opinion, good enough to compete in League One. I think that's clear. They've obviously given mid-table Shrewsbury in League One a pretty decent game. You say they got battered for large parts, but the stats say otherwise. And it was an even game overall, I think, and they just took their chance. So yeah, they could, I think, compete at that level. But it depends what kind of investment they continue to put into the club. They've obviously got a cop stand now, which is a big source of revenue for them. Getting far in the cup as well is a big source of revenue for them. So they are kind of becoming self-sustainable. I think from a Wrexham fan's point of view, that's kind of doing it the right way, isn't it? That's what you want to see.
Yeah, and they've made sure that the fans have been a massive part of that journey. So that's, to me, that's the most integral part of it. And the attention that they're drawing is just bringing bigger and bigger sponsorships as well, and investment will come into the club. So yeah, it's excellent. It's hard to judge their ceiling because you can't imagine that this model gets them all the way to the the Premier League and the top four, but that's what the owners have stated as their aim. So who knows? It depends on how much that ambition can carry you forward. But right now, again, these moments are what make this story so exciting. So long may it continue, really.
Yeah, it's an interesting story to follow as always, and I think we'll continue to follow it on this channel. So, any Wrexham fans watching, hit subscribe and stay tuned. We love to have an opinion on their travels, don't we, and on their journey, and I think that will continue till the end of the season. So, FA Cup third round, there's loads of football to cover. I think a lot of it we just don't have time to see, do we? We've all got busy lives, but we've kind of picked what we thought were the highlights. But there are a few games we didn't mention that just included stunning goals, and I just want to get your opinion on some of the particular favourites of mine. There were three, I think, especially that were just top draw goals. And they're all from Premier League players or former Premier League players in one case. So Pedro Porro first for Spurs against Burnley. It was a pretty dire game, but his was a
Rockets.
rifled shot, wasn't it, from the edge of the area. Morgan Gibbs-White against Blackpool again. He's in a great vein of form. Takes his time, takes one touch and rifles that into the top corner. And also Patrick Bamford against Peterborough. I mean, the technique in here makes me realise that maybe this is probably your favourite too from your reaction, but the ball comes to him. He chests it and turns at the same time and then volleys it from outside the edge of the box with a player quite close to him too. That is an incredible technique to score a goal from, isn't it?
I think you're doing him a disservice by saying from the edge of the box as well. It was about 30
Yeah,
yards out,
well out. Yeah, fair enough.
and it flies over the keeper into the top corner as well. Who knew that Patrick Bamford had that in his locker? He's a weird one, Bamford, isn't he? Because there was a period of time where it was like, well, yeah, he has to be in the England squad. He's the backup to Harry Kane. He was prolific for a while. There
True.
was times where obviously he came through at Chelsea, didn't he? Struggled to ever kind of establish himself in the Premier League, but every time he dropped to the Championship, looked excellent. So then came back to the Premier League with Swansea, struggled, went back to the Championship, did really well. And then Leeds kind of made him for a while and he looked really strong. And then he just disappeared, it felt like. So this moment was quite nice. And another thing that the FA Cup draws out, I suppose, these reminders of, oh, don't forget about this player. Do you remember that he's here? And actually, he can do that. Like, ridiculous. It's my second favourite goal of the season so far. It's not a touch on Garnacho's for me, but the technique in it is wild. The confidence to hit it as well. Yeah, ridiculous goal. Fair play
Yeah, I
to
think talk of that being a Puskás contender is, like I think you said before we recorded, a bit of recency bias, isn't it? Because the technique involved in Garnacho's from a terrible pass from Dalot at the time was just nothing
him.
short of a miracle, really. So yeah, that probably pips it really to goal of the
Yeah, it
season. But
does.
yeah, incredible array of goals nonetheless. To finish
Yeah.
the pod then, mate, I'm springing this on you out of surprise because I feel like I want a more authentic answer from you as an Aston Villa fan. Now, you've not been on the pod for a couple of weeks. So clearly, Villa, like you say, have won their first FA Cup game for a while, and it probably feels like it too. But in the Premier League, tell us how you feel about the balance of play at the minute. We were kind of playing down a title race, weren't we, last time we talked and said, let's not get too optimistic. Now, the peak period of football has passed. The busiest period of December has been and gone. Villa have got through the other side in a very, very good place. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling nervous now because the higher you are, the later in the season, the more the pressure starts to build. And it's funny because I did not see us finishing second for the year. And when I look back at a couple of the results, the frustration builds a little bit that actually we probably should be top right now, which is mental. But we should have held on to the lead at Old Trafford, obviously. I'm glad I didn't have to talk about that one with you and Dave. I went to the Sheffield United game just before I went away, and again, another game that we should have picked up points. And you look at those moments and you feel so frustrated, but I'm just glad that they bounced back so quickly. Had they not won against Burnley, obviously it took a very late penalty for them to get back into it. Had they not won in the FA Cup, then you're looking at where Arsenal are right now, where you're analysing, oh, is this a bit of a slump mid-season? And instead, they didn't let that happen. They picked the momentum straight back up. It's fantastic. And I'll say, till I'm blue in the face, it's because we have one of the best managers in the world. And he's carrying Villa through it. And the squad is far better than we've had in my recent memory. And there's still work to be done on it to really compete at that top level. I hope that we don't have a silent January. I don't think it will be that busy. I think we'll maybe see one or two come in if others go. There's obviously been talk of John Duran going to AC Milan, which would definitely mean we had to move in for a striker now because we couldn't be without backup to Watkins. But I don't know. I don't worry about anything because I have so much trust in Unai Emery. So even if we went through this window signing no one, I still think we'll get top four because that's what Emery is capable of.
I guess the big question is then, if the coach is no longer really a doubt in your mind, obviously, which is nice to say after the Gerrard era, it's the players really that need to sustain that level, isn't it? And whether he can keep them at that level. Also, if you get tested, particularly with injuries like many clubs have, and I know you have so far this season,
I
but
think we are.
how you manage that is going to be key as well. So, have you got any doubts about the squad? And if you were to reinforce in January, what would you want to see taken as the priority?
There are definitely things that the squad still needs for depth more than anything. But I don't think I've got doubts about the squad because I just know that Emery will get the best out of every player there. And that's huge. We obviously need competition in a few places. At left back, there's talk of Lucas Digne leaving again, which I think would be, I'd be gutted because I understand that he's getting older. He's on very big wages at Villa, but he's been one of our standout players so far this season. If he does move on, we'll have to look for a left back. We definitely need competition for right back as well. There was talk of Jeremy Frimpong, which would be incredible, but obviously he's moved a lot further up the pitch recently, so is a lot more similar to Matty Cash than probably the profile of right back we'd be looking for. There was obviously talk of Wan Foyth for a while as well, so I wouldn't be surprised to see us look at the fullback positions. It's funny because we absolutely need depth in the centre forward position, but it's the hardest one to strengthen because you're not going to get someone better than Watkins. So then you've got to get someone who's happy to sit behind him. Well, we've seen when we had Watkins and Ings that that's really hard to do, to get a good level of player that is willing to not play every week. Even Duran seems to be fed up with not playing every week at the moment. So it's hard. Villa definitely need to do a few things, but let's not forget, we're still missing Tyrone Mings. We're still missing Emi Buendia. Tielemans has been out for a while and we've really missed him. There are a couple of games where, like the Sheffield United game and the Burnley game in particular, when that low block is there, you need someone that's going to unpick the lock, and Tielemans is definitely that player in the final third. So we've missed
100%.
him massively. So yeah, I think we have had difficult injuries. I think there are things to be done in January, but I'm not worried because if you ask any Villa fan, they will all just say, look, what have I got to say about Villa right now? Anything I might think, I've just got to trust Emery with it because there are decisions that I wouldn't have made that Emery's been there and he's been right every single time, obviously. He's incredible. So, yeah, I have full faith in them.
Yeah, well, the centre forward market's a difficult one, isn't it? It feels like every club's in the same market at the minute for the same position. So, yeah, it might be one to avoid. And I don't think they would let Duran go if they had somebody lined up, maybe. But I don't think they have because so many clubs are in that position.
Do you know the one that I've heard a couple of
Who?
times quite loosely? There's two I've heard. One of them would be my absolute dream signing, and I don't think I'd stop smiling on the pod if it happened.
I know you're
That
going to say that.
Dybala's release clause is only 13.5 million, and apparently it's something Villa are looking at. The other one, really randomly, that I keep seeing is Mikel Antonio. I
Very
mean,
short
I'd
term,
take
though,
it.
would you?
I'd take it right now. Yeah, why not? It's back up to Watkins, proven Premier League goal scorer. Different profile of striker to Watkins as well. He would definitely come in and do a job for us. I'd take that.
Interesting. Aston Villa taking some of the best players away from rival clubs. Times have changed, haven't they? It's crazy to be a Villa fan
What
right
you need to
now.
do.
But good to hear your opinion, mate. Good to have you back on the pod as well. Just to finish the pod, just to say the news that German legend Franz Beckenbauer was died at the age of 78, which obviously an era before ours, but it's one of player that we know has been kind of put on a pedestal, really, as one of the greatest defenders of his generation or any generation. So another one we've lost this year alongside Bobby Charlton. It feels like the two giants of the game of the same era. So really sad news there coming out of Germany. And our condolences to his family. It's such a big loss for football.
Just quickly, I just think it's worth mentioning that actually the kind of player that Beckenbauer was is exactly what a lot of teams are looking to emulate now in their centre backs. Like that centre back who's really confident on the ball and excellent passer, can carry it forward. It's funny that all those generations ago, yet it's still something that people are striving to replicate now. So massive impact on football.
There's one player I think that will continue to be sort of influential for generations because I think his style of defender it's quite modern now, isn't it? Whereas back then it was quite revolutionary to see such a sophisticated ball playing centre back. So yeah, a revolutionary player for the game and a big loss. But yeah, I was going to say that's it for this week's pod. As always, a call to action. If you're listening to this, please hop over to YouTube as well and subscribe over there. Give us a like on some of our videos just to continue our growth, because we have had a great year in 2023, but this is our year, Miles, to absolutely smash it in 2024 and reach more football fans. Because we did a poll, I don't know if you saw it on our YouTube channel, about how many fans from which clubs are subscribed to us. And at the minute, it's majority Aston Villa, believe it or
I wonder
not.
Why.
Nottingham Forest, which is absolutely great, but we talk about those clubs quite a lot because they're so interesting. But wherever you're from, please do hop over, give us a look, and hit subscribe. That'd be great. Until then, mates, until next time, hopefully I'll date back on the next pod so the three of us can be reunited to talk about all things good, bad and ugly in the football world. Thank you, mate, and see you soon.
Thanks, guys.